The near post, get there first, don't get there second, don't get there third. The near post, get there first, if it's for football news that you thirst. The near post, get there first.
Hi and welcome to the near post. We are talking football, soccer, Australian soccer specifically, across the Australian Community Radio Network. And us in the studio, we're on 2XX. With me in the studio are Aaron Walker. Hey, how are you going, Aaron?
Not too bad, Paddy. How are you?
Excellent, excellent. It's for us, it's the post-grand final show, so it should be a big one. And Nick, you've got your East Gosford Rams FC shirt.
Yeah, I thought I'd show some Central Coast pride now that there's a actual decent Central Coast Mariners team supplier. I'll go for the local club.
Right, okay. Yeah. Well, a big shout out to East Gosford Rams FC. Did you ever play for them?
Oh, yeah, since I was 5 till when I came down to Canberra, so 13 seasons, I think. Yeah.
Wow, okay. Surely you get some sort of plaque or...
I got a 10-year plaque, yes.
Oh, really? You did?
Yeah, and I coached for 2 seasons as well before I left.
Wow, big respect. And Aaron, while we're talking people that play for, Aaron, who do you play for? Do you play still?
I do still play, actually. Uh-huh. Well, play is not the operative word. I do go on the field, though, and stand around while others play around me. I play for Canberra City, which is a very traditional club. In fact, in 1977... we were in the National Soccer League, and our coach was Johnny Warren.
Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay.
So, very traditional club with a lot of history.
Yes, yes. When you say your coach was Johnny Warren, did you was Johnny Warren at any point yelling at you?
Well, no, I wasn't born yet, but spiritually I was there.
Nice, nice. And do you, if you guys are anything like me in the spirit of football, it's not so much the running around, more sort of pointing and yelling at people and telling people what to do. That's kind of my position.
I get pointed at and yelled at. That's more my caper. Well,
everyone's got to have a role, don't they?
That's right.
Yeah. All right. Now, in the next half hour, we've got all the news. We're going to talk through the A-League Grand Final, which was, I think it's fair to say, a controversial one. And... well, basically, you know, we've got the game. There were some issues in the game. There was the elbow versus the nose incident. There was a penalty and the Marsden medal. So all of that to go through, and also a bit of a coaching merry-go-round. We'll try and dissect if we get that time. Now, if you have an inquiry or you simply like to tell us how much you'd like the show, you can do so on our email, nearpostradio, all one word, at gmail.com. Alternatively, you can catch the podcast on www.nearpost.blogspot.com and on iTunes, as well as halftimeheroes.com.au. Now, every week I have a dedication. This time, I'm going to dedicate the show to the 2,500 Perth Glory fans who either trekked across or were already there and represented at the finals. They made a bit of a noise and certainly were noticed.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I do believe Tony Sage hired a jet so some fans could make their way over for the grand final. I think that was something I did read on the internet. I'm not sure how true that was, but if he did, no, that's excellent stuff.
On the internet, Nick, it's true.
Yeah.
Well, he's got more money than us, and so he can do that. But surely the jet couldn't have carried 2,500.
No. Obviously, a lot of people forked out their own hard-earned money for flights and whatnot. It was a shame that they didn't come home happy, but... yeah, that's football.
Well, look, before we do talk the grand final, I'll put my cards on the table. I am a Perth Glory supporter, and I did have some friends who trekked across from Perth to Brisbane. So a big shout-out for Sam and her friends who made the trek. And, Sam, I'm very sorry that you guys didn't come through. And I also know that a few people, including myself, were looking at flights up to Brisbane, but again, financially, just couldn't make it. I also know some Brisbane fans, but I don't think they're worth a mention. Thanks, Rafe. All right. Guys, in terms of the quiz, what I'm going to ask you today is because football is alive through Twitter, and specifically Australian football very much lives on social network. Have you guys got a favourite Twitter account?
A favourite Twitter account?
Yeah.
I like a guy named Mark 11. He's a very low-profile Twitter. He doesn't have a whole lot of followers, but his comments are always very much on the mark. He comments on Australian football. He's a very good account.
Right, okay. Nick?
I'm going to have to say I don't really use my Twitter account as much as I should.
Because I follow you on Twitter and you don't come through.
Yeah, I made a couple tweets this weekend on the grand final. That was a special occasion. But other than that, I'm pretty desolate when it comes to that. However, I will mention that there's this blog called The Swiss Ramble that goes really well into the financial side of the game.
That is a fantastic blog. Yeah. But that's not Australian football, but it's just
general football.
It's a financial analysis of clubs. Aaron, have you seen this blog?
No, I haven't.
Oh, get on it.
Australian?
No. I'm assuming it's a guy who lives in Switzerland. I wouldn't be surprised if his background was in finance because he does analysis of clubs from...
Their published financial reports. They're like their earnings, their player amortization, which is like spreading transfer fees over a number of years, all that sort of stuff, and how player sales factor into the actual financial health of the club.
There's some really good ones he does on Udinese and also Arsenal. Okay. If you like your numbers, if you like your financial analysis, and you like your football, that is the site for you.
Okay, excellent.
Now, almost to the point where you can't get through it all. It's so detailed. All right. Well, you're on the near post. We're talking Australian football, and what we might do is get to this week's news. Nick Jr., are you going to present the news?
Okay. Start off with the massive news that broke today. Ange Postecoglou has quit the Brisbane Roar just hours after the team went through a massive ticker tape parade in the city centre, I believe. Wow. It's a bit of a shock. Obviously, I thought he'd wait a couple of weeks before announcing it.
Well, why is it necessary to do it so soon? Does it show a little bit of lack of respect?
Oh, I'm not sure. Obviously, he's given up on the ACL group stages. He doesn't want to because he won't be around for the final two games. The next one's on Tuesday week, I believe. It's a bit disappointing, but obviously he's going to go to Melbourne Victory. Well, that's my opinion anyway.
I think it's yours and many other people's.
But yeah. Then Brisbane Roar skipper Matt Smith has identified Rado Vidicic as the most likely successor for Postecoglou at the Roar. I think that's probably the most likely. They wouldn't want to spend big money on a coach who doesn't know the players and possibly risk them not gelling together. Luke Sneal was among the scorers this weekend as Al Jazeera retained the President's Cup with a 3-1 victory over Bani Yass.
Yep, big respect to Lucas. High-scoring Lucas Neal.
Yeah, he's grabbed quite a few over there. Aurelio Vidmar has been appointed as the Australian under-22 coach, with his former captain, Paul O'Connor, announced as the under-20s boss. Obviously, this is in the... what was I saying? It's good to see Australian coaches getting a chance now. The Dutch coaches have been phased out. Hopefully, they bring some success, but we'll see how it goes.
It's good to see ex-Socceroos... Foster would be happy, no doubt.
Yeah, bringing that wealth of experience from the national team days into the squad is definitely an added plus there. Outgoing PFA chief Brendan Schwab said he was confident that the PFA will continue to protect the players' interests with the same vigour and passion it showed when it was created in 1993, when I was born, coincidentally.
Is that right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's a bit disappointing that Schwab's leaving the PFA. I thought he's had some great views on the game, especially at the FFA forums about where the future of the A-League's going and whatnot. Hopefully his successor will be the same sort of questioning presence when it comes to the FFA and the A-League. Sydney FC has emerged as a hot favourite to host Italian giant Juventus in a friendly that will bring down the curtain on Alessandro Del Piero's career.
Surely not. Like, that to me, when I came across that news, that's amazing. Are we going to see Alessandro Del Piero's last game? Like, I would go and see that game.
I highly doubt it would be his last game. I think they'd probably have one in Italy all the fans.
Do you think they're just trekking him around the world to make some coin?
Yeah, the farewell tour for Alessandro Del Piero could make a lot of money for the club. But yeah, if they did come out, it'd be a great game. I'd be willing to go to Sydney, even to watch Sydney FC, to see that game.
Can we go back to the PFA with Brendan Schwab?
Sure, why not?
Yes. Is the PFA needed? What do they do?
Well, what have they been doing? The PFA is a negotiating point. It's the union, if you will. The players, with the tight salary cap and with the way that Football Australia is managing the A-League, surely they need representation. They need someone stepping forward for them.
Would the fury still be around if the PFA weren't?
Would the Fury still be around if the PA were not around? Yes. I don't know. Why? What are you saying? What?
Well, I'm saying that there is a certain minimum salary cap, which is 1.85 million, which the clubs need to spend. There are certain minimum salaries. Why do we have this? So do we need it? And if they didn't have it, would the clubs be able to survive if they were better off in a free economy?
Right, a libertarian argument from Aaron there. I don't think so. I think the salary cap's an integral part of the A-League. It's what makes it so even. What makes teams like Perth Glory, who were, you know, really struggling last year, be able to come out and be a force this year. It means the Melbourne Victory, who were such a force in the last few years, and now struggle.
Is it forcing up player wages above their international market value?
Because there's a free economy outside of the A-League, then surely you can't be forcing wages up, because the guys can go elsewhere. They've got free market forces outside of the league.
Okay.
All right. Great. Moving on, Nick.
Okay. The FFA and A-League clubs have appointed 6 members of a joint strategic committee that will be chaired by FFA Deputy Chairman Brian Schwartz. The new committee will meet every 2 months to make determinations on strategic and policy matters affecting the A-League.
Talking committees, yeah. Do we need this committee? Is it simply a PR move?
Absolutely required. I mean, these are the people that are pumping money into the game. You don't think they should have some say or another of the way how it's run? If I was spending $5 million a year and losing money, bleeding money,
you'd want to have some say in how
it was going. That's exactly right. You know, the clubs don't get any money from the finals. The finals, which is the biggest games with the most attendance, that money goes 100% into the coffers of the FFA.
Is that right?
Is that fair?
So the FFA gets the finals and all the Socceroos money.
And the merchandise.
Wow. So who's on this committee? I assume Palmer's on this committee.
Tony Sage is.
Tony Sage has been appointed the representative of the owners, I believe. He was talking about that on the World Game last night, I think.
Right.
So, obviously, him being the main figurehead there. I'm not sure about the other owners that have been represented. I can't think of any of the other owners of the clubs, actually.
Well, there's only the 6 members, so I think there's only 2 clubs being represented, and the PFA carry most of the other spots.
Yeah. Okay, James Troisi has walked out on club Kayserispor. I think they got that right. After a great 2011-12 season where he scored 10 times, but faces a FIFA complaint because he apparently did not give his club any notice that he was leaving. The PFA have apparently stepped in with Troisi, telling him to walk away, but due to his wages not being paid on time.
But what are you saying? The PFA and Troisi
advised him. The PFA advised him to walk away from the club.
To walk away without giving notice. Is that good advice?
I don't know. If someone gave
me that advice in the public service, I'd question it.
The point is, Aaron, it was advice, so the PFA is doing something.
Oh, well done. Well done.
There may have been a miscommunication. He may have sent his resignation to the wrong email address. We're not entirely sure. Okay, and finally, closing with some pretty good news. Melbourne Hearts central defender Curtis Good has had his trial at Newcastle United extended for another week, I believe.
Really?
So he's been over there for the last fortnight, I believe, just having a trial for the first team. And it was due to end today, I think, but they've extended it to either this Friday or next Friday.
That's a good sign. Yeah. Newcastle.
This Friday. Right. So, yeah, hopefully he gets signed, because Newcastle are on the up, I believe, and that would be a great team to have someone playing for.
Thank you. And that's news for this week. You're on the Near Post. We're across the Australian Community Radio Network, and the website that you can download podcasts from is www.nearpost.blogspot.com. And on that blogspot, certainly authored by Eamon Flanagan, is two blogs which are particularly good, I thought. 5 things about the grand finals. These 5 things is very popular. I think it's driven pretty much by The Guardian, who do 5 things on almost every match these days. But 5 things about the grand final, I thought they were quite good. And a well done Perth, and followed by the question, what now for Perth? So we'll touch on a few of those things in the radio show.
Sounds good.
It's well worth a read. So moving to the grand final, the big one, I assume both you were there at 4 p.m. watching the grand final?
I was watching the game, yes.
Nobody went to the grand final, just checking?
No, very close.
Not on a student's budget, definitely not.
Could have hitchhiked up there. Yeah. Aaron, you almost made it?
Yeah, I was going to go. A friend went, and I was considering going with them, but I pulled out at the last minute.
Yeah. It certainly would have been an action-packed game. Maybe not the prettiest game, but an action-packed game. I just want to... There's a few things I want to talk about with the grand final. First of all, let's set the scene. The stage, there were 50,000 people there, 50,334 people, the third largest A-League crowd. So, Brisbane, what's their average turnout? Aaron, do you know?
Brisbane's average turnout is about 15,000. If you have a look back at the previous years, that's not their best. They were averaging up above that at one stage, up at about 25, which is where I think a team like Brisbane, when they're winning, considerably winning over two seasons, should have their
average. Well, they should be. So where did all these other people come from, these football lovers or just sports lovers?
Well, a lot of them came from around the country. I mean, when you're winning, you get a lot of bandwagon fans. I know two people from my own soccer team of 16.
Yeah, who went up there?
So
okay, well, maybe that is it. I was going to throw some derogatory remarks towards Brisbane supporters for jumping on the bandwagon, but maybe it was national bandwagon jumpers.
Possibly.
Yeah. Nick, Brisbane, did they deserve to be in the grand final? They had a pretty good run, didn't they?
Yes, obviously.
Sure, I know I'm asking by the time you. I'm stabbing you in the gut.
By the time the final series had rolled around, Perth and Brisbane were the form teams of the competition, so they probably did deserve to make the finals. Mariners had dropped off pretty much since Matt Simon had left. I keep touching on this. I'm not going to say anymore. But yeah,
we'll call it the Matt Simon effect.
They were the two deserving teams at that point in the season. Yes.
So Perth, did they deserve to be there?
Yeah. I think by the time that they started out pretty horrible. I have to say a couple good wins to start the season as usual, and then they just descended into that usual mid-season slump. But they pulled out of it. Shane Smeltz hit form. Jacob Burns started playing really well without getting carded.
They started to tighten their defence. Vanderbrink had a great sort of run in the latter half of the season. I think he's generally a fantastic player. I really liked him in every club that I've seen him play for. Yeah. And I think he was a big part in victories. Victory's run. So
glorious run.
Glorious run. Let's call it a glorious run. So
glorious victories.
I was happy to see the home crowd and the underdog and the a bit sad to see the underdog not win, but I thought both teams deserved to be there, and it was all on come the first whistle.
Yeah. I don't think it was a particularly inspiring match in terms of the quality of play.
Yeah, let's talk the match itself. So you think that it was, you're not saying unexciting, you're just saying not a very good match.
No, a lot of comments on Twitter were about the surface being not up to scratch. I noticed a lot of bobbles on that field, yep, just from normal passes, mainly that final one for Berisha. I think that was a bit of a bobble there. But I also thought Thomas Broich had a very poor start to the game. He was strong. He made some good challenges in defence, but every time he got the ball for the first 20 minutes, he just did not do the right option. And, yeah, it was very interesting to see him awarded the Joe Master Medal at the end. But
we'll get to the Joe Master Medal. So, Aaron, pretty even game, possession-wise?
Possession-wise, yes. Very cagey game, which finals often are. Neither team's willing to commit too many teams players forward, which is quite rare for Perth, but they were a little less offensive as they would normally be. A lot at stake. Perth really went in with smothering tactics. They just wanted to prevent Brisbane from playing, really. They weren't that interested in having the ball.
I'm going
to
call it desperate. It was desperation play.
Desperation play? I don't know about desperation, but they had a game plan and they executed it quite well. Brisbane really were limited to their chances and Perth didn't really create any of their own. So you'd call it a cagey match, I would say.
It just occurs to me that we didn't mention the score, and just for anybody who listens to this show just to find out
who's
going to
listen to this show that doesn't know the score, Patty. Let's be
sure. There's some people carrying on from opening minds, which was the show before us on 2XX. The score was 2-1, and Aaron and I were talking before the show. And Aaron, you're not even letting me claim the only goal that Perth scored as a Perth goal.
Oh, it was an own goal.
It wasn't. It was not a Perth goal. It was an own goal from Ivan Frenjic.
So. So for those listening at home, essentially Perth scored in the 51st minute, and pretty much I thought Perth had the game from then on in. Unfortunately, stats tell a little bit of a different story. Brisbane had, I think, 7 shots on goal to Perth's 1 shot on goal.
I can't recall one.
The fouls were 4 from Brisbane and 7 from Perth. Often a stat that really tells the story is the corners. The corners were 8 corners to Brisbane and 1 to Perth.
Okay.
So they weren't, that to me says that they weren't in the attacking third a great deal. And there were 4 yellow cards to Perth, to the 1 of Brisbane. And dare I say there should have been maybe a few more yellow cards as Perth was getting frustrated towards the end. So, I mean, I was heartbroken. I was heartbroken with the result and the way it ended. But I wasn't surprised to see Perth play that way. That's very much the way that they have been playing. They haven't been playing beautiful football this season.
No, no. Lock up the game, lock up the midfield, make sure nothing happens and jag it at the end. That was their game plan and they very nearly pulled it off.
So is this the story of the coaches? Postecoglou with his raw Salona playing on the ground, short passes, 1-2, ticky-tacky football all the way through. And then Ferguson from Rangers, hard-edged, hard-nosed football.
Yeah, absolutely. In Glasgow Rangers style, yes.
Yeah, it reflected both the coaches, I thought. And something we'll be talking a lot more through the off-season, as the A-League has a very long off-season. We'll be talking through where the clubs need to go to next, and I think Perth is one of the big questions. So the game wasn't pretty. The stats suggest that Brisbane pretty much had it, the particular stat of the goals. During the game, there was one key incident, many key incidents, one particularly major one, was elbow versus nose.
Oh, yeah. Shane Smeltz, overzealous challenge on Matt Smith, ended up popping an accidental elbow right in the face.
When you say overzealous, do you mean he led by
his
nose?
He flew in. He was just straight in from the side view of the camera.
Should he have got a yellow?
It's possible. If he hadn't gone out injured, I think he would have gotten yellow because he was flying in with the foot raised from memory.
See, as a glorious sport, I saw that through a different lens. I saw it as a vicious assault on Smeltz.
Was that deliberate or not?
Maybe.
I don't think it was deliberate. There's no way that Matt Smith thought, oh, Shane Smeltz is suddenly going to appear. I'll just hold my elbow out and hope he just runs his face into it.
Perth have often been accused of being a one-man team. It's all about Shane Smeltz. Shane Smeltz, the biggest game of the year, cops a big elbow in the nose at the start of the game.
I would suggest that it was
not suspicious.
Yeah. I thought they were gone once that happened. I think if Shane Smeltz was going to get injured, it would have been when he had the ball. I don't think Matt Smith grabbed the ball to himself and thought, okay, Shane Smeltz will tackle me. I will elbow him in the face and he will be out of action.
So perhaps a little unconscious. I'm going to go for an unconscious attempt to... No, it certainly was a conscious elbow. Unconscious attempt to maybe put the pressure on Shane Smeltz. I love the bandaging.
Yeah, the lovely... Full round the head bandage.
Full round the head, and the way it lifts the nose in that sort of, I'm a little bit of a freak kind of way.
He ended up getting 50 stitches, I believe.
So the photo went out
on
Twitter.
He played, 85 minutes, I think, of the game.
Yeah, Aaron, did you see the photo?
Oh, yeah, it was great.
That's fantastic.
Tweeted by his wife.
So 50 stitches, like you say, it's like you say, Nick. So all the way through, split his nose and down through his lip.
Yeah.
Quite incredible.
Mm.
That takes quite a blow, and the blood, there was a lot of it. So elbow versus nose, and like we say, whether it's conscious or on purpose or not, one thing's for certain is Shane Smeltz is one of the key players for Glory, and I felt that he ran around like a headless chicken for a good 10 minutes afterwards and maybe never settled down, although perhaps he didn't have the opportunities to show it. Mm-hmm. So, trundling along, there were a couple of goals.
So, yeah, Brisbane fought back, obviously, once Perth had scored that goal. I didn't really think they were going to push for a second. They probably should have. I think once Brisbane go two behind, it makes it a whole lot more difficult, even though, as we saw last year, they can still do it. Smeltz was taken off after 80 minutes. I thought that was the resignation that they were going to play with a 10-man behind the ball philosophy. And then Berisha popped up to score a goal. It was very interesting.
Well, here's the thing, and before we get too much into it, Aaron, the ref played a significant part of the game. So the Absolutely. Question I'm asking you, are refs real people? Should they have girlfriends?
No. Yes. No referees should not be allowed to have
Because there's a bit of controversy, isn't there?
No, yeah. Jared Gillette, the 25-year-old A-League Grand Final referee.
Who had a great season, let's just say that.
38 A-League games under his belt, and he was given the Grand Final.
But I put this down to the FFA. They should not be putting him in a compromising position. The referee should declare that, yes, I have a vested interest in Brisbane via the via my partner, and he shouldn't be given a chance.
So let's just get this straight. His girlfriend
is a part-time employee of the
Brisbane Roar. Part-time employee. Media employee. Are media people really employees, Aaron?
I don't know. We turn up and get paid. Whether we do any work or not, that's a different issue.
Is her heart and soul really in the club? So, look, I don't think there was too much of it. I mean, maybe you need to state that conflict of interest, but I don't think there was anything in it. The real question, and the question that everybody's certainly has an opinion on, I wonder if you guys have different ones. Was it really a penalty? Nick?
Look, I think Berisha just miskicked the ball.
He looked fell a bit
over.
Silly.
He was off balance already. I think, though, that from the angle where Jared Gillette was looking, Liam Miller makes a lunge. However, he doesn't make contact on the cameras. But from Gillette's point of view, you can't really see any sign that he hasn't made contact.
There was contact.
Berisha falls down. There was like a slight grazing of the back of his left leg.
There was 100% contact.
100% contact.
Oh, Miller admitted it.
Oh, okay. I thought that he got a few clips but didn't fall, and it wasn't until
he
regained his balance and then had a swing and a miss that he fell.
So what happened is that he was planting his leg to shoot, like you put your left leg down and then you hit it with your right. He was putting his left leg down. Miller clipped him, which put his leg on top of the ball, which made him slip, and that created the air swing. So contact result in a loss of a goal scoring opportunity. I thought it was an absolute scandal, being that Miller didn't get the red card. Goal scoring opportunity, penalty. Nice. Why is this not a red card? Last offender.
I thought it was a penalty, maybe not a red card. I hadn't considered the last offender. The last offender rule really isn't applied as strictly as it should be, is it?
Well, I've seen a lot more controversial ones given away. Look at the Australian one in the World Cup against Italy, where it was halfway up the pitch. If that's not the last defender preventing a goal-scoring opportunity, I'm not sure why the rule was made.
I think it was the timing of it that really heightens the controversy, was in effect the last kick of the game and the winning goal.
Yeah, either way, I think if that penalty hadn't have been awarded in extra time, Brisbane would have won it. Once Berisha scored that first goal, I thought there was only one way the game was going.
So how easily we brush away aside my pain, and I did feel pain. I was very upset about that. Now, the last point that I do want to talk is the Marsden Medal. So it went to Thomas Broich, is that right?
Supposedly. He was presented with the Marsden Medal at the trophy ceremony.
He was presented, and there was a big announcement. Like, it was him.
Yeah. And then a couple hours later, I believe, it was revealed that, no, Jacob Burns had actually won the Joe Marsden Medal.
Absolute amateur hour. So Simon Hill gets up there as MC, opens the envelope, there's nothing in it. He looks over to one of the FFA employees, who has a bit of a stunned look on his face, and says, Thomas Broich has won it. Thomas Broich has won it. And so that gets announced. And then later down the track, they go, no, there's been a miscommunication. Could you imagine that happening in the Brownlow Medal in the AFL?
Fantastic.
It is absolute
what
amateur.
What was funny was that David Zvillich on the World Game last night made a reference to an Australia's Next Top Model or something like that, where they announced wrong winner.
Same thing happened.
Yeah.
Sarah
here. Except it's not such a big deal.
I don't think that even happens at East Gosford Rams FC. Like, no. That is a ridiculous.
We get our envelopes printed right.
Well, talking about getting envelopes printed right, this is the end of the Near Post, and I'd just like to say, if you're at the Near Post,
get there first.
Get there first. The Near Post. Get there first. Don't get there second. Don't.